The underdog is howling.
This is Stanford Steve and the Bear.
Ah, yes. A home team getting points. What's better than that?
There we go. Sweet 16, it's here. Maybe a little letdown from the extravaganza that was Las Vegas last week. Thanks again to the Denny Hamlin Foundation for having us. Unbelievable time. Seeing a bunch of you degenerates out there, but good time. Bear, you're good?
Our people, yeah. And everybody at Westgate J and John and Rosemary and everybody for helping us out and getting us set up in a great spot and great running into so many people out there this last weekend.
South Point, all the boys.
Yep.
Michael's crew, unbelievable.
Like Michael's. You like Michael's.
Oh, my Lord. I never knew it was there, man. All the time I spent at South Point.
And that's the beauty of it.
It's unbelievable.
It used to be over at Barbary Coast.
Yes.
Back in the, and I went there, gosh, it had to have been 20 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. 20 years ago, I think it was, actually, yeah, it would have been right after the Tennessee Florida State Fiesta Bowl.
Okay.
Went to Vegas for a weekend and
did you?
Got to go. Yeah, imagine that.
I don't know if there's a better meal in the city.
It's awesome.
It's awesome. Unbelievable. So shout out to the whole South Point crew, V-Sin.
They're great. I feel bad that I didn't get a chance to get over there and see Chris.
That's all right. They said they'll see you soon.
Vinny loves. Yeah, we'll be out there for sure.
Vinny and Chris and also J. Root at the Mirage, tremendous host for a session. And his crazy nephews are unbelievable. Shout out to those guys. But, yeah, so we're back. The Sweet 16. I think we were kind of different on, remember we talked about the total seeding in the Final
yep.
Four, and you were going off the whim of, hey, history is
there's
said.
There's going to be someone. We don't right. know who it will be, but there will be one, and now there is only one.
There's only one. And we're going to have Sean Farnham on to break all those games down. He's been ahead of Oregon as anybody has, being a former Pac-12 guy. Pac-10 guy, I should say, to get that right. But we'll touch on all the dogs. I'm going to ask him. We have at least a 5-point dog in each region.
Yep.
Which one he likes best, and then we're going to go down that list. Worst matchup, all that stuff. So we'll get an analyst opinion on here. But when we look at it, it's a lot what I thought was going to happen. I thought that maybe, you know, we talked about picking your underdogs one round ahead to try and, mm-hmm. you know, reciprocate getting some points in your pools and stuff like that. But all the one, we got everyone 2 and 3.
Yes, we do.
And we have a 2 that's a little wounded that we didn't know about in Kentucky that we were really, really high on.
Even though it looks like he, as of right now when we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon,
yep.
I saw him post a little something to social media earlier that he's out of the cast and out of that boot and walking in sneakers. So it appears I'm going to operate right now under the assumption that he's going to play. See, I had heard the rumor going around out there was that he kicked a chair in the locker room after the SEC after losing to
Tennessee.
That's the rumor going around.
Do your sources confirm that?
No sources have been able to confirm all that, right. But that is that's what had been floating around out there.
This is what my theory is. This is way going out there. He had that Alabama quarterback surgery. Remember Tua mm-hmm. at the Heisman
yep.
with the Walker. Remember PJ last week with the Walker.
Yep.
Just.
Think you turn that around that quick, though? That's
I don't know. I mean, nowadays?
You never know.
An ankle. Those hoopers are resilient fellers. So we got all those teams. We have a matchup of two of my favorite coaches in college basketball, and John Beilein and Chris Beard. Obviously, our thoughts on Duke. We saw what happened there.
By the way, before you go too far, driving in this morning, and you mentioned Beilein and Beard in that
yep.
game. And I'm listening to Mitch and Paulie and
okay. VC.
And Paul, and they start talking about the game. And Paulie's like, yeah, I don't know. Going against Beilein in the NCAA tournament, it's kind of like having Mexican food while you're driving around. 2 minutes in, you realize it's a bad idea. I was dying at that line. So. Kudos to Paul.
Shout out to those guys too. Hung out with them at the D and off the strip after we were at Westgate on Friday. Those guys are a treat. Unbelievable, great show they have also as part of that VSIN family. But let's dive in, Bear. Let's go Thursday. First one, we're going to start out west because this never makes sense. 4 o'clock local tip. The Zags 7.5 to Florida State. over under 147. We saw this matchup last year where Florida State got hot at the right time. Never really was a game. And a lot of the, plenty of the Gonzaga naysayers were on their high horse last year. Do you see anything different this year?
Well, number one, Tilly didn't play in that game.
Correct.
Which is a big deal. And it's so, like, there are so many things that point to Florida State being the side in this game. The fact that Leonard Hamilton's done so well as an underdog in the NCAA tournament, 7-1 with five outright wins. You look at how Gonzaga really struggled last year. I think it was 34% from the field and like 5 of 20 or 5 of 21 from 3-point range, something like that. I just wonder if it's funny how we've had all these favorites winning so far. And I think if you look at the recent success of underdogs in the Sweet 16 and the fact that none of them won in the round of 32, it's almost like that. You look at Florida State, you look at Virginia Tech, you look at Duke, you look at Oregon. I think you got three teams that kind of are headed towards public underdog status. I wonder if Florida State.
That's a good point.
I wonder if Florida State can shoot the ball well again in consecutive games. Mm-hmm. This year, since ACC play began, they shot better than 50% four times, and they shot 50-something percent against Murray in that blowout win. In those previous four games, they shot 39% or less every single time. So odds are they have not been able to put together really good performances in terms of shooting the ball this year. I wonder if Gonzaga kind of letting up a little bit, and that's never really felt like they were going to lose to Baylor. I wonder with revenge and the fact that a bunch of guys in Gonzaga didn't have a great game against Baylor. I mean, Clark was unbelievable, but some other guys really struggled. And that's the beauty about Gonzaga. I think when you have – when Hachimura struggles, Perkins struggles, and like you get Kispert and Clark to carry the team
–
odds are those other guys aren't going to be a no-show again. So it feels like Florida, the number screams, it's too many, it's too many, it's too many. But if I were playing the game, it would be Gonzaga or pass.
I look at this, I don't like the game really much. If I had to pick a side, I'd take Florida State with the points. The one thing about Gonzaga that's different to me is they always had a bigger guy. You know, they've done well, you know, with the overseas guys, whether it was Sabonis or a Karnowski. Mm-hmm. But with Clark, teams would just go high ball screen against those guys, you know, against the old Gonzaga teams. And then right there, you had a mismatch of your point guard there. Clark's good enough and athletic enough to switch off on that, man. So that was the old, you know, MO to go at Gonzaga. You can't do that anymore. So they're really, really versatile how they defend. They haven't seen anything like this. You know, I know they played Carolina, but this Florida State thing is something, you know, you haven't seen anything like it when they're making shots because there's nobody like them. And that's why they're here.
Yep.
They've played great ball the last couple weeks, and it's a fascinating matchup. And don't think they don't forget, you know, that they dominated last year in this position.
They should have a ton of confidence. And it's so funny. I'm thinking back to this weekend before that Murray State game. We're looking. They were still like 50-1 to win it all, which was like a ridiculous price. And it just leads me to another little general tangent here about like when to bet games and just the value that there are, the value that exists. Like, I think it was 5 minutes in or 6 minutes in, or about it was going right before into the second TV timeout, and Morant was still making shots.
Five of five.
I think it was. I mean, Florida State may have led by like six at the time. And at that TV timeout, like they were still only like minus 350 on the money line to win. And I'm sitting there with my buddy. I'm like, this is a mismatch. Like there's no way they're losing this game. I mean, they are so much better. And I'm like, this is like just walk to the window and send it in as many times as you want. So it's crazy how there are. Live betting is just for some of these situations. Lord. You can get a little bit of knowledge early on and see the way the game's going, and that way they should have been probably -550 at that point in the game.
All right, so you're leaning towards the points here.
It's a no play for me. If I had to play it, I would play Gonzaga, but it wouldn't shock me at all if Florida State won. So I wouldn't. I wouldn't mess with this game.
All right. So let's not spend as much time on these games if we don't really mess.
No, but I think people want to hear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no doubt.
Our opinion.
The over-under 147.5 scares the crap out of me. So
Brandon Clark over-under 16.5 points. Any feel on that?
Under.
Hachimura, 18.5?
Over.
Terrence Mann, 12.5?
Over.
I would think that's probably an over as well.
He's been sensational, I think.
Total number of 3-point field goals made, 14.5 combined.
That's all on Florida State.
It is.
All on
Florida State.
Gonzaga's going to make 6.
Gonzaga hasn't shot well. They're going to make 5 or 6.
Yeah.
So it's on Florida State to make 8 or 9.
They know their numbers.
Yeah, they're pretty good at this.
Unbelievable. I was listening to, I think it was Murray, talk about the player props. And he's like, I was just taking the average and adding 2 points, and people were still taking it over. He's like, it all evened out. It was great. People loved it, though.
How about Maryland LSU, by the way? Opens at 1, 1.5, closes at 3, lands on 2.
Unbelievable. It's the tournament. Yep. That's why we love it. Let's move to the next game that Thursday night. That's the South region. Tennessee -1.5 against Purdue, 146.5. I'm going to go here. I looked at Purdue. I watched Purdue. I woke up, Saturday. I saw Purdue giving 3.5. I said, give me Purdue. Why are they giving points to the defending national champion?
Yep.
That made no sense to me. And I brought up last week on the pod about Carson Edwards. I said, can he do it?
Yep.
You know, he did it.
He's been unbelievable.
What was it? He averaged 34 for the weekend, obviously 42, 9 threes. And that over went in by 4 points with him scoring 42, them scoring 80. They score 81.
80, it was 81, something low 80s.
81, yeah, something like that. So I look at this under, like, I think Tennessee, they have 3 guys to throw at Edwards. My favorite quote reading about this game, you'll love this.
1.5, 146.5 right now is what I said.
Yes, yes. Rick Barnes about this game, when asked about it, quote, you hope that the officiating is good, close quote. So that just tells you he is not holding any punches. You know, he's got his guys, Lamonte and Bowen that he's going to throw at Edwards. I still worry about Tennessee scoring in a big spot. Iowa's Iowa. You know, those guys aren't known for their defense.
No.
So I think this is a fascinating matchup. I always get scared, Bear, when the team has that guy that could just go off. In this situation, especially when he's a guard and these new age, you know, ball dominant guards. Purdue, I think, is a live dog here. I think there's a lot of pressure on Tennessee here. Knowing, you know, how they have been built with their, you know, leadership and older guys and, you know, gutting through a lot of stuff with coaching changes and stuff like that. I like the under in this game. I think it's a methodical, pace by Purdue. They've been awful in this round under Painter, 0-4 in Sweet 16 games in his 14 years. Last year they got destroyed by Texas Tech. It hasn't been pretty in this round. I think he knows he's got a chance here with Edwards. I think maybe, you know, they like to shoot the 3. I think they get some open looks, but I think Purdue can control this. I like under 146.5 here.
To follow up on that, Painter 0-7 versus top 3 seeds in his career in the tournament, including 32-point and 13-point loss last couple of years in the 16. It's funny. I sent out a couple of tweets this week and just some of like the, well, is this one going to go to like quadruple overtime between Painter's struggle against top 3 seeds and the fact that Barnes is 1-9-1 against the number in his last 11 NCAA tournament games. And another weird little thing that involves 2 and 3 seeds involves Tennessee and LSU both fall into this this category about teams that didn't, 2 or 3 seeds that didn't cover in the round is 64 and 32 wind up getting to the 16. Last 10 years, Kentucky, 2017, beat UCLA, 2016, Oklahoma, beat Texas A&M by double digits, 2015, Notre Dame beat Wichita by double digits, 2011, North Carolina, won by double digits in the Sweet 16 as well. So the theory there behind that is really good teams that haven't played their best game yet that probably are going to play a better game than what they played so far. Typically, they do play well in the 16, so you can take that into your thought process on handicapping the LSU-Michigan State game and the Tennessee-Purdue game as well. If I had to play the game, I would play Tennessee as the side, but the prop here that I like from Westgate is the largest lead of the game is over under 12.5. I think you've got two incredibly streaky teams that can get out to a lead or fall behind if their shots aren't falling and then make up ground. So I think someone's going to lead by 13 points or more at some point in this game. Gosh, we saw Tennessee blow that, and we saw Purdue get out to a huge lead on Villanova as well. So that would be my play for this game.
I like that.
Biggest lead over 12.5 points.
Okay. The next one that night, go back out west, Michigan -1.5 against Texas Tech, 126. One question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Both teams score 60 here?
I could see 62-60, something like that.
Right?
Yeah.
Like it's a perfect
I want no part of this game.
I just want to
watch and enjoy this game.
Okay.
I want no part of this game.
I talked about this game on a Daily Wager the other day. It's fascinating. These are my two favorite guys. I say it all the time and I'll never get tired of it. They're unbelievable. Beeline has been so good to the Coughlin family come March in these years past.
He was good to the Felica family last year, getting to the final.
You have no idea. I love you, Coach Beeline, and your staff. And
30-1 ticket to win the championship last year, get to the championship game. Hedge it off. We're good. Thank you very much.
It's so tight. These teams are so similar. Yep. I went back and looked at the numbers. They both average giving up within a point a game of each other. One team's 58.2, I think. One team's 59.2. 3-point percentage they allow, 30% against 29%.
That's the one thing with this game that I'm kind of interested in. The over under is 13.5 combined threes. That seems a little low.
A little high.
Okay. Right? I think unders might be the way to go.
I trust Beeline being able to get his guys more open looks offensively off of schemes than making them.
Okay.
I trust those guys more in Texas Tech. Although I think Texas Tech has the goods. I could see Texas Tech winning a national championship. Can you?
Could I see them winning a national championship?
You see them cutting the Nets down?
No, I don't think so. Could I? Yeah, I don't think they will. Full disclosure, I think my opinion of Texas Tech is a little skewed for the absolute embarrassing, awful, inexcusable no-show loss against West Virginia.
Right.
I think seeing that,
because you know what does history say about that loss?
Yeah, those teams don't win.
Yeah,
but just seeing that and how far, like, that's a terrible West Virginia team. Or I shouldn't say
they just got beat by Coastal Carolina.
I guess it happens. I mean, you get hotter, you have a bad game, and you a little bit of pressure. But I think that game might be skewing
You're scarred.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a rough one for the money line parlay that night.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah. That was bad. Yeah, that was bad.
So you're off of that game. I just want to lean over just because I look at that number. Both teams have the ability to put the ball in the basket. It's going to be as well as defended game as you're going to see in this round. I just think it's a little fun to have the over in those types of games because you're a couple 3-point streaks from going over, and you know, you people that bet the under are sick in the head. So I just try and give you a little time to go off once in a while. You know,
to quote Mr. Andrews, it's never under till it's over.
Exactly.
And one another just to follow up on Beeline, how much we love him as a coach. He's been involved in 16 NCAA tournament games where he has either been a favorite of less than 4 points or an underdog of less than 4 points. So basically like one possession type games like this is. He's won 12 of those 16 games, which is you win 75% of your toss-up games essentially, including a 27-point win over A&M last year in the 16. Guy's awesome. And he doesn't – the great thing about him is he doesn't have the most talented, best team. I mean, his players are good, but they just buy in. They run stuff, and Beard's a great coach too.
Yeah,
I want no part of going against either of these guys.
Just watching, feet up.
Maybe under 13.5 threes. That might be the if I had to do something on this game. You're telling me I need to make a play. That's what I would look at.
All right, last game Thursday night, Virginia -8.5 versus Oregon, 119.5 is your number there. To me, Bear, I think last weekend was really good for Virginia.
Yes, it was. Totally agree.
They had to do it again in the first half. They got blitzed right in the face, and they had nowhere to run and hide. They got it on that timeout. They looked at each other and said, holy,
all right,
you know,
here we are.
14. We know this feeling.
Yep.
Let's see what we got. All right. They come back, weren't great in the next game. Oklahoma's not the best.
Yeah,
they
might have went.
They didn't play well. Like, they didn't just shoot lights out where they could just cruise. They still had to defend. They still had to make some big shots. I thought they ran their offense great late. You know, like I said, Oklahoma's not a huge threat, but they didn't play well and they won. And I think that in this circumstances, in all the buildup and knowing what they had to endure this whole offseason, I think it was phenomenal for Virginia to go through what they did last week. And I don't know about the 8.5. Oregon feels like a public play.
It feels like a total public play.
Does, okay.
A team that can go through a lot of scoring droughts. And you've got to wonder about Oregon a little bit in terms of what, the four games in 4 days at the Pac-12.
Yes.
And then you win. And
Sunday night to Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, the flight from San Jose to Eugene's not a long flight. But then again,
and they go down the flight, Anaheim.
It could be a factor.
Oh, wait. No, sorry. This is Louisville.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're Louisville and the D.C.
They're kids, man. I don't look at that stuff. They're riding the best time of their life right now.
These are things that people are thinking about. Just throw it right out there.
With Virginia on the other side, that's why I like Virginia in the spot. Because if it was at somebody else where Oregon could just get their feet wet, mm-hmm. you know, not shoot well early on, if they don't play well early – Virginia is just going to put them in a stranglehold because Oregon's not the best offensive team.
I will say this, though. Oregon's got some freaky athletes that I think are going to contest shots and be a problem for Virginia. And Pritchard is a really good point guard, and I think he can potentially hold his own as well.
No doubt about it.
I don't think this is automatic. Now, Virginia's going to have to play, like, to echo what you're saying, Virginia's going to have to play well. Mm-hmm. To win this game.
But with all the, you know, being on Daily Wager show, all those modeler guys, they're all over Virginia.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing with that. I think the model needs to kind of be a little
adjusted.
You need to put a little recency bias in there. You need to adjust it for how Oregon has played the last month of the year since they really figured out what they're doing without Bull and how they're – I think you need to look at that. I think those numbers are really skewed and basing a lot. Yeah, I think the early part of the season should count, but I think you really need to weigh a little heavier on the how well Oregon has played recently, because that's the team that you're going to see on Friday night – or Thursday night, rather.
All right, so you're – what about the points here over on?
I would – if I had to play the game – I would play Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the.
What about that beautiful up and down number? 119.
Huh? You look at the 112s in the Sweet 16.
Mm-hmm.
19 and one seed's never been beaten. Only one game was decided by less than 7 points. Every other one won by at least 8.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, history. I mean, again, history says in this situation the ones do typically take care of business, but is Oregon not a typical 12? Are they a more talented team that kind of underachieved because of the injuries that they had and it took them a while to get going? And we're talking about Beilein and Chris Beard. I mean, Altman's another guy in the tournament who you look at his games at Oregon. He's 14-4 against the number.
Yeah.
And he's 9-1 with 6 outright wins as a dog. I mean, another guy who has played very, and that's why I think a lot of these trends with some of these teams and coaches and how well they've done in these roles are going to lend a little bit of value, I think, to the favorites, because I think you're going to get a lot of underdog hype, and a lot of the public going to take these dogs, thinking that a Cinderella run might happen. So you might even be able to get a little better number. I think if you wait a little bit, you might be able to get a 7 or 7.5.
Okay.
So I would wait, and if I had to play it, I'd play Virginia.
I could be totally wrong on this. But the time slot of this game, the latest game on Thursday night, just makes me feel like – it feels like a situation where that's the craziest game.
Well, good. That's the chaos region. We're down to Oregon to keep the chaos theory alive.
So I would take Oregon with the points here. I mean, if you've been riding Oregon, why the hell are you going to get off
exactly.
now?
Yeah, totally.
You're getting 8.5 is the best spread you had all the whole run. You were giving points in the Pac-12 title game, weren't you, to the one seed? Yeah, they were given.
Yeah.
And then dabble on the over. Maybe the ball goes in the hoop for the old Cavaliers early in the big lead. So that's Thursday. We'll get to Friday, and we're going to get to Sean Farnham right after this. For more March Madness coverage, check out Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian. We welcome in Sean Farnham, one of our favorite analysts here at ESPN. Did we get laundry done? You've been on a plane for, what, 12 days?
Oh, no. I just finished a stretch of 31 out of 32 days away from home, and I just got home. Today's day one of being at home, so I'm excited.
Any time over a 32-day span you see more of Steve and myself than your wife and kids, that's a bad, bad, bad thing.
Sorry about that.
No, not during tournament time. I mean, you know that. I mean, this is a fun time. This is not a complaint about our job kind of time. This is the time you want to be working and you want to be talking about the biggest games that matter the most. And this is the pinnacle of college basketball. And unfortunately, we don't have the games, but we certainly have the platform to talk about those games. And it's been a lot of fun so far. And I'm looking forward to the Sweet 16 Elite Eight this weekend.
Well, as you were, all over our country, Bear and I were in Las Vegas last weekend, and I stopped by the beer park at the Paris, and they said you were at an outstanding tab, so I picked that up for you. Thank you. You're all set from our time out there a couple years back.
But can we go back and do that again, please?
Oh, God, was that the best thing? That was when the marathon was fun.
Yes, now we're all stuck in Bristol. No offense to Bristol, it's a great place. Make sure the Chamber of Commerce gives you a good shout-out. But, you, me, Adam Amin. Then we had Vital there for a quick minute.
Yeah, he got out of there real fast. Dion.
Yeah, he's like, Celine Dion, I got to go see her. And then we had Brett Musburger came by. I mean, that was fun. And you influenced me to bet on my first ever game that I ever put money down on.
It's legal.
Yes.
Very good. Speaking of betting, let's get into this. Every region has an underdog of 5 points or more. Auburn plus 5, it's LSU plus 6, it's Vatek plus 7, it's Florida State plus 7.5, it's Oregon plus 8.5. All those teams are the biggest underdogs we have in this round. Who do you think out of that group has the best chance to win the game on the court?
I would say probably there's two games that would really interest me a lot and make me think that the underdog has a chance to actually win. And one of them's going to be like, really? Oregon. I think Oregon's got a chance versus Virginia. Their defense has been outstanding during the last 10 games, 54 points per game by opponents. I think the field goal percentage is down to about 34%. I think the 3-point field goal percentage that they're giving up is still around 23. So they have been elite at the defensive end of the floor, and that's what's helped them win games. And I think the emergence of Kenny Wooten has been a game changer as far as his ability to protect the rim. He had 7 block shots last time out. He does a great job working behind the backside of the zone, able to throw lobs to him on a consistent basis, and even against the pack line defense. Sometimes the pack line defense becomes ball focused. And so if Peyton Pritchard is able to break down that first defensive player, it forces that next guy to step. As soon as you step, it's a lob to the rim and Kenny Wooten's getting dunked. Mm-hmm. I think Oregon's one of those teams. It reminds me a lot, to be honest, of my UCLA team my senior year when we were 13-11. We were horrible. We looked like we were going to the NIT. Then we ran off 6 straight games. Oregon is, and I said this with SVP the other night while you guys were in Vegas, but Oregon is a mid-major team, essentially, in this tournament. They had to play their way in. They had to win 4 games in 4 days just to get an invite. That's not what you normally get out of power conference teams. Mm-hmm. You're usually getting that out of the mid-majors. So they have gone through the gauntlet of win or go home, and they have thrived every step of the way. And I think there's a chance that they could win the game outright against Virginia. If Virginia does what it did in the opening round, if Virginia struggles to shoot, which we've seen them, that has happened before. Now, they are better than they've ever been offensively. And if they won this game by 5 or 6, I could see that coming. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're going to be able to pull away from Oregon just because of how Oregon's been playing and the tempo and the pace that they've been playing with.
Okay.
The other game that would stand out to me would be Florida State Gonzaga. And as much as I love the Zags, remember Florida State beat them a season ago. It's a very different component, very different makeup on the floor this year for Gonzaga when you look at the emergence of a guy like Brandon Clark and the games that he's had so far, including the last one out where it was really a historic game in the NCAA tournament with 35-plus points and 5-plus blocks that had only been done 2 times before. But Florida State's length and Findu Cavangeli has emerged as a star of stars offensively. And for a Florida State team that struggles to score, he needs to continue to be effective off the bench. He has 43 points off the bench. That's the most in the NCAA tournament so far. And his stock is skyrocketing amongst the NBA scouts that are watching him. Style of play again. Can they get the Zags out of transition, force them to play in the half court, kind of like what St. Mary's did with better length? They can. And I think that's going to be really important. Defensive transition, getting back, forcing the Zags to play in the half court, forcing them to make plays, and then having the length to disrupt their bigs underneath. And they certainly have the ability to do that.
Just going back real quick, Sean, about Virginia and Oregon, we talked about this earlier in the podcast, and we agreed on this notion. I think it was really good for Virginia last week to win the way they did. They got punched in the face. They had nowhere to run against Gardner-Webb, and they came back and they got the job done. And then the next game, they didn't play well against a subpar Oklahoma team, but they got the win. How important do you like that mindset? Would you feel better about yourselves if you're Tony Bennett, knowing that you overcame adversity in what a spot you were looking to all year long, and you finally got there and got kicked in the face, but you responded?
Yes, for round one. No, for round two.
Okay.
So for round one.
No, I got you.
Yeah, here we go again. Oh my gosh, everybody gets tight. You're down by six at halftime, which they were actually lucky to be down by six.
Mm-hmm.
You go to locker room. You calm your guys down, they come out, they respond on a 22-5 run or something like that to start the second half.
Yep.
Great. Now we found ourselves. In round two, against really a subpar Oklahoma team, I expected Virginia to really come out and execute and play the way that we thought they should be capable of playing, and they didn't. They left a lot to be desired as far as playing their best basketball of the season. And now you get to the second week in the tournament, and that's why, again, I think Oregon has a chance to win this game. You have to be able to sit there and say, okay, are we hitting on all cylinders? If you had never seen any of these teams play all season long, I'm going to ask you guys this question. If you haven't seen any of them play all season long, and you saw Virginia's first two games and Oregon's first two games, who do you think is better?
Oregon. That's funny. That's what we were talking about earlier when we were talking about this game. Like, so many of these, like, computer models and modelers for the game have Virginia like as a 12, 13, 14, 15 point edge. And I was saying, I just don't buy that because I think those numbers are taking into account earlier in the year when they were still trying to figure themselves out without Bowl. But if you look at the way they played in the last 6 weeks of the year, it's hard to argue that athletically they're not right there with Virginia.
Well, the other thing about that, too, is, okay, so with Bowl had 32 and they lost to Texas Southern at home. That just tells you what a lack of commitment there was to the defensive end of the floor. Dana Altman's team has always been best when they've been locked in defensively. The team that went to the Final Four was great defensively. They utilized Jordan Bell in the same role that Kenny Wooten is filling right now, and Kenny's doing it with more athleticism than Jordan Bell did. So I think here's the thing. Bowl going down actually helped Oregon. Because it went through this transitional phase of who are we? We have no identity. We lost the guy we thought we were built around. But a lot of that was built on the offensive end of the floor. So what it allowed Dana Altman and the coaching staff to do is say, okay, so we don't have our best offensive weapon. We don't have the human mismatch. So here's what we have to do. We have to defend. Guys, and this is how we're going to go do it. And then there's a buy-in factor that came in on that. They had some monumental collapses. UCLA game comes to mind immediately in February. I mean, just mind-boggling that they lost that game. And it's the same kind of mentality. Those losses, those painful losses, is fueling them during this run now. And when you watch the rotations defensively, and I'm not talking about anything from the gambling side of things, I'm just talking about watching them on the floor, the way they're covering on-ball screens, the way that their help-side rotations have been, the ability to protect the rim, the ability to limit your opponent's second-chance points opportunities, those are check marks for Oregon and how bought in they are. And when you're connected this way, you can win games in March. It doesn't throw the records over the course of the regular season out the window. And again, anybody that's listening, go back and watch the film from the first two games and pretend like you don't know anything about these teams, don't know their records, don't know their seeds. And you tell me what team looks better on the basketball floor. I'm telling you, it's Oregon.
A team that was lucky to survive on Sunday, Duke. I mean, before the tournament, we had the Duke versus the field props, and I came on Daily Wager and said I'd still take Duke versus the field going into the NCAA tournament. I'm not sure I would now. Would you take Duke versus the field now? Or would you take the field?
I'd take the field. I would take the field. And I think that Johnny Dawkins he really exemplified how you're going to play Duke. And rule number one, don't guard Trey Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, they left Trey. Guys, look, they put Taco Fall was guarding Trey Jones. They said, just stand in the middle of paint. If he gets close to you, close up. If not, let him shoot jump shots all day long.
Yep.
And he was horrible. Horrible. And that's – and you're daring him. Look, if you're – and the old adage is, if you're open, there's a reason why you're open. And he was unable to figure that out. And I think that what you're going to do is you're going to put multiple eyes on Zion. Zion is going to get his, okay? But can you shut down everybody else? So say Zion gets 30. Can you keep R.J. Barrett from getting to his left? If you have multiple guys and you're not guarding one of the players out there, and if you put Jordan Goldwire out there on the floor, that's two guys you don't have to guard. So now all of a sudden, now you're playing basically a triangle and two. And you're saying, all right, you guys, if you shoot jump shots, it's fine. We'll be late contest to all those jump shots. We got to limit second chance points opportunities. We got to be able to compete on the glass. And then we can push it in transition, guys. We don't have to play in the half court. We don't have to slow it down. I think pushing it in transition, and you saw UCF do that, and obviously to a detriment when they had the 4-point lead and they filled the alley-oop and they missed it. But if that play goes down and it's a 6-point lead with 147, 152, game is over. Mm-hmm. It's not even close. It's done. And so I think when you look forward, I don't think Virginia Tech's going to be the team to do it. I don't, even though I like Justin Robinson, and obviously they're more than capable with shooting from the outside to make this game really interesting. But I just don't think Terry Blackshear is going to be enough down low to stop their ability to score in the paint. And their ability to dominate on the glass in this particular contest. But moving forward, if you have an LSU or a Michigan State, also that game has become a little bit more intriguing to me than what it was at the start of this tournament.
I
was with you, Barrett, at the start of the tournament.
You hinted at it a little bit. I was going to ask, if you're Duke, are you happy or concerned that you're playing Virginia Tech, that a team that you're familiar with, but at the same time, a team that's familiar with you in this round?
I think you're happy. I think because you really know their personnel. Now the difference, obviously, from the game that Duke lost to Virginia Tech, they didn't have Zion, so Virginia Tech hasn't seen them with Zion. But yet Virginia Tech fans equally could say, well, you haven't seen us with Justin Robinson because Justin Robinson didn't play in that game either. But if you're gonna tell me that Zion's impact on the game is equal to Justin Robinson's, I'm going to tell you that you've lost your mind because Justin Robinson's a good player. Zion Williamson is a ridiculous player that is able to change the game, in particular at the defensive end, unlike any other player that we have in college basketball right now. His anticipatory skills and jumping passing lanes, getting deflections, blocking shots, I mean, he strikes fear, more fear, I think, at the defensive end than he actually does at the offensive end, and that's a credit to his commitment and his effort at that end of the floor.
Looking at Friday's games, Sean, what coach has let's put it this way. What concerns you more, LSU's matchup against Sparty or Auburn's matchup against Carolina?
Concerns me more from the standpoint of if I'm the favorite in that game. If
if you're the dog, like you're worried about your matchup as an underdog with LSU and Auburn.
Oh, Bruce Pearl.
Yeah.
It's Bruce Pearl.
Okay.
Because look, LSU, you've got enough athleticism and length. And you got a really good point guard in Tremont Waters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, okay, Cassius Winston, Tremont Waters, that's going to be a lot of fun. Michigan State is turnover prone, as we've seen throughout the course of the season. So they might cough it up enough where it makes things interesting for us. We can rebound with them when you look at our size and athleticism. I think LSU's feeling a little bit better. Auburn is one of those things where you're looking and going, okay, we can be there, but we got to hit 16 to 17 threes in order to be there.
Gotcha.
Because rebounding is going to be a problem for them. And who guards Luke May? I think we're in a situation where this is a Zion-less Duke team trying to figure out how to guard Luke May, and that didn't work out too well for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think Luke May is going to be a huge matchup problem. The length of the wings, too, for Carolina, like Kenny Williams is going to get in Bryce Brown. He's not going to feel comfortable. You know, Kobe White versus Jared Harper is going to be a lot of fun. But Cam Johnson on the opposite side, who marks him? Who's going to stop Cam? I think Cam and Luke May are the two guys that could really go off in this game and cause some problems for Bruce Pearl's team. And as hot as they shot the ball in the opening weekend, I do go back to history and look at the numbers of this team away from home, how they shot the ball over the course of the season, over the last two seasons even, when in road games and neutral site games, what is their win-loss record versus what their win-loss record is at home. And you'll see that there's a lot more losses than there are wins away from home. And I love Bruce Pearl's team, and I thought coming out of the opening weekend, that performance against Kansas in particular in the first half was as dominating as a performance as we've seen. But I just think the fun kind of stops here in the Sweet 16. I think Carolina's going to cruise.
Okay. I just got to ask on this. With Izzo against Benford, how much of a difference does that make in a game like this on this stage? Like that much of a coaching advantage with experience against a guy who's just taken over the team the last couple of weeks. How much does that really, really mean right now?
I think it's massive.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I think it's been there.
Just from the days leading into the game or like the actual in-game?
The preparation aspect leading into the game, I think, is huge. I would also say that once the game starts, that the ability to know when to make the adjustments on this stage, everybody gets tighter. And I've seen it, and I've been there, and I've seen coaches get tight. But this is an opportunity. You're going against one of the best coaches in the country, period. And Izzo usually has an advantage over his opponent. But this one is substantial. I mean, let's not forget that Benford cost them the game against Florida.
Sure did.
By getting the technical.
Sure did.
I mean, so if you're asking me who my vote of confidence and who I'm putting my chips on, Izzo's the guy. I mean, people can have the false narrative of getting upset because he got on his kids. How did his kids respond after that? How did Henry respond? Hit two big shots down the stretch of that game. I think he responded just fine. Izzo knows the pulse of his team and knows what buttons to push. Versus essentially an interim coach that took over 2 weeks ago.
Do you think Wade is having any input in the preparation leading up? I think he would. Even though you would think all the evidence is pointing to him probably being out, but I would think he'd still be helping Bedford the team out.
Will Wade cares about his kids. He's not abandoning these kids right now, I promise you. And I guarantee you, as soon as Michigan State won that game, I guarantee you at his house, he got on Synergy and started breaking down film and developing the game plan. And everything that the coaches are going over, I think, are coming directly from Will Wade in preparation for this game. But again, you're taking his information and delivering it secondhand to the team.
Yep.
And there sometimes can maybe there's something that he sees on tape that as you're practicing and preparing for it, and you go, well, this is what the coach wants to do. This is what we're going to do. And it may not actually work, so what's plan B? What's plan C? And as you're going through practice, are you able to come back to Will Wade at his home and be like, okay, coach, we tried that. It wasn't working really well, and here's some of the problems we had at practice. How do we fix that? And those conversations are tough to have because you're allowing the kids to go through practice and not address it, not change it, and then come back the following day and be like, okay, wait, so we took the film of practice. He saw it. Here's what we need to do. It's a weird situation for LSU, and credit to these kids to stay with it. And regardless if any of these kids are actually involved in this case, and obviously Smart would be the one name that comes out more than anything, I never root against the kids. I'm sorry, I don't. I want these kids to have their moment. I think they already have. I think it's been great what they've been able to accomplish. And there should be a great sense of pride in that locker room amongst these kids right now for what they're experiencing.
Okay, two questions are kind of related. Over under 1.5 wins for the SEC in the Sweet 16, and then into that, more important to Kentucky versus Houston, Hagans defending Corey Davis or the presence of PJ Washington?
I think I'm going to start backwards going forwards, if that's okay. I'm going to say it's Hagans guarding Corey Davis. Because if you take away Corey Davis offensively, this team really struggles offensively. I've seen it throughout the course of the year. I saw it in their game against Temple when they lost at Temple. They defend really, really well, but then you're looking at Armani Brooks and Dejon Algero to try to make plays, and they can struggle. They can struggle to score, and when they struggle to score, you kind of push things a little bit, and some of the quick shots that they take end up being runouts for their opponents, and they haven't faced a team like Kentucky. They haven't seen a team that can run on the open floor like Kentucky. Tyler Hero, his ability to defend the wing as well, I think that's one of the – he hasn't shot the ball excessively well in this tournament, but boy, has he defended well. And that's why I like Kentucky in this game, even though we still – we don't know. P.J. Washington, he's out of the walking boot. I guess that's the latest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's great, and hopefully he's able to go. But, I mean, look, Reed Travis was going to be the conference player of the year in the Pac-12. And Stanford Steve's team would have been in the NCAA tournament had two players not left, Robert Cartwright and Reed Travis.
Yep.
And if those two guys were up on the farm, Stanford probably would have won the Pac-12 this year. So you transferred to Kentucky for a reason. You transferred to win. You transferred to have a chance at a national championship. So this is the moment he's got to show out. They still have guys like Nick Richards, E.J. Montgomery. They've got guys that can go down low underneath still and can disrupt things. So I don't necessarily worry about it too much still in this round. I would if they're playing Carolina in the Elite Eight. But I think Kentucky's going to win. I think Tennessee's going to win. So that would put me at the over of 1.5 wins for the SEC.
A couple things on the way up. Carson Edwards, over under 23.5. Over or under?
I'll go over.
Oh, okay.
But over in a loss. But, yeah. Over with poor shot attempts.
Okay. Got it. So he's gonna need to ice down that arm afterwards.
Yes.
All right. And my favorite coaches in college basketball are playing against each other Thursday night in Anaheim, Michigan, Texas Tech. Is this your most anticipated game of this round, what you want to see, or am I on an island with this one?
No, I really do, because I think defensively, obviously, these are two of the top teams in the country.
Yeah.
They're really going to lock up. So who's going to get free? Is Culver going to be the guy? Is he going to get enough space? Is Mooney going to have to step up and be that maybe a leading scorer on a night where he moves from a secondary scorer to a leading scorer for Texas Tech to advance? And the same thing could be said. I mean, one of the most underrated players that we have in college basketball is Xavier Simpson.
Yes.
He is so important to Michigan. Whether
Mike White talked about him after the game the other day. He was darn impressed.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, he is the head of everything that they do.
Mm.
And then offensively, he makes the hockey assist better than anybody in the country.
Mm-hmm.
He sees the floor so well, he's making the pass that leads to the pass that gets the shot. And so he doesn't get the assist, but boy, is he in complete command and control of that game and that team at all times. So I think if you watch him play individually and you'll appreciate it. I don't anticipate this game to be maybe even in the 70s. I think this is going to be played in the 60s. I think first team to 60 might win the game.
I asked Bear if both teams – do you see both teams scoring 60?
I said this has like 62-60 written all over it.
Yeah, I would say like 66-63, 66-61, like something around there. I think
right around the number.
Over.
It's 126.
Is it really?
Yeah.
See, this is your world. I don't even look at this stuff, but that's where I think it's going to be. I do.
Okay. What else? What else? You, on the way out, anything you haven't talked about that you want to in this round?
No, I mean, look, I think what we've seen is the first time since, I'm sure you guys have talked about it.
Yep.
Most chalk that we've seen since 2009.
Mm-hmm.
In the Sweet 16, and I think this is where it continues to go chalk. All of us were sitting on the set during the bracket marathon, and they asked us about the overall addition of all the seeds and how much it would add up to. I think the original over was, what, 11.5?
Yes.
Yep. And unless Oregon's able to run this thing out, it's going to be under. Because I do think this favors everything right now, favors the Gonzaga Bulldogs, North Carolina, Kentucky. I think you're going to see Duke, Michigan State. I mean, you see a lot of ones and twos playing for the Elite Eight, and I think it's going to be a great weekend of college basketball.
And the number of one seeds that reach the Final Four will be?
I have it at two.
Okay.
I have it at two. I've got Carolina, because I think, honestly, if you guys have seen this, and Carolina's played the best basketball since the middle of January of anybody in the country, even in that loss that they had against Duke. They actually played a better game than Duke did that night.
Yep.
Even though Duke won the game. And I know a lot of people will be like, this guy's lost his mind. But go back and watch. There was a couple of things that you can easily clean up and execute it better. They didn't shoot the ball excessively well. They shot it below their percentages, which they did from beyond the arc all season long. And a lot of that wasn't because they were contested threes. They just miss. So if they shoot their average, they beat Duke even with Zion Williamson. So I think, I've got three. Excuse me, because I have Gonzaga getting there as well. So I have 3-1 seeds and a 2 seed getting in. I have Tennessee getting in the Virginia oh. region. And so therefore I'd have 3-1 seeds getting in.
Okay. Chalky Chalkerson.
Yes. Yep. I'm all about the chalk this year.
And where are you going to be the next year? You're at LAPC for these games, right?
Yeah, I've got LA Sports Center on Thursday and Friday night, and then I head out to Minnesota on Tuesday of next week.
All right, we'll see you in Minnesota.
We'll see you in Minnesota Friday.
All right, you guys are the best. Talk to you soon.
Thanks again, bud. Thanks again to Sean. Wish you got more run here. Guy's awesome at his work.
Yes,
and,
he is.
Nobody works harder. And I just appreciate how, I wanted to ask him about Bill Walton. Everybody was laughing at him during the Pac-12 tournament. Here's Bill's Ducks still playing.
Exactly right.
So
I think if the Ducks get to the Final Four, maybe that's next week's guest.
Oof, man. Man, we're going to need 2 hours for that one. 2 hours, two questions. So we got plenty of breakdown there. Friday, our thoughts, Bear. I don't know if we got him in there. I have a feeling you like LSU with the points.
I really like LSU with the points in this game.
Okay.
And I also like LSU is first to 15 at plus 130. I think they're going to come out on fire. I think they're going to get out to a lead. And it's just going to be a question of whether they hang on or if they blow a big lead like they did against Maryland. And that's every LSU game this year. LSU starts fast, it's out to a lead, other team comes back, and just question of do they hang on? Because I like what he said there about Wade having an impact in the game plan. Yeah. I think with a couple of days that helps, because that was a Saturday game. And I think obviously they knew that. In Michigan State,
They can't play bully ball against these guys.
No. They got the little bit of a scare again in the first round.
Yeah.
And then they played a team that they blew out once already this year in Minnesota. Minnesota lost a kid early in the game. Mm-hmm. They were not going to be threatened in that game. This is a team that is an athletic equal, if not superior, to Michigan State. And I like the Sixers. I like LSU maybe even to win the game.
Okay. All right. High number there, too. 148.5. I mean, if you're going to say LSU comes out, like that's going to come in, that's what you need. If you want the over, you need still, exactly what you
you're
have.
You're basically saying one team probably in the eight. One team's probably going to hit 80.
I don't see that.
That seems high.
Yeah. I'm looking at all these numbers. I mean, we'll touch on them here because it's more so these days, Friday, than the day. I mean, I talked about how I like the under in the Purdue game. The other two overs I like because they're low numbers, and I like my chance with foulings because teams aren't going to give up at this point in the year. They're going to keep fouling. But that's a high number with Michigan State involved. And they're not – I mean, they've lost, you know, with injuries. They're not as deep as they were. So they're going to really need to make shots. McQuaid is huge in this game.
Oh, he hit the biggest shot of the game in the first round.
Huge. And I'll get to another guy who I think is really important in that Kentucky-Houston game. Might be the most important guy in this round. But I lean towards taking the points here with you with LSU. The next game is Carolina and Auburn. And I bet this as soon as I saw it. I just took Carolina money line. Mm-hmm. I laid 230. You know, we had Bruce Pearl on the other night. Yeah, he told Scott to take the over.
Oh, I heard. That's who he is.
It's 165. And Sean touched on this, but when Bruce Pearl says, you know, let's play our game. Let's worry about ourselves. We like to run. We like to get up and down. We like to shoot threes. Every year in this tournament, it feels like Carolina gets this team. And that team that's playing against Carolina just isn't used to how good Carolina is at doing the same exact thing because they have better guys doing it. And I looked it up. They've scored less than 62 points once since January 10th or something like that. I mean, they've been scoring at a clip. They're so versatile. Kobe's made as much money as anybody, I think, in college basketball at the next level. Like I didn't think he could shoot like this. He's been lights out. You know, I mentioned the other day, like a normal team would come out against that Washington 2-3 and just, you know, be a little hesitant, like, hey, can we get this? And they just came out like they're fearless. And, you know, Sean mentioned Auburn's going to have to make, you know, 15, 16 threes. I don't see that happening. Carolina's just going to laugh at them how they want to play. I love Carolina. I don't want to give any points. I would lean towards the over, too. I think you could see 100 to – I think Carolina could score 100. I think Auburn could score 85, 90.
You could. You could. And I think, again, this might be –
This is on Auburn.
Yeah, this might be another good in-game type play as well if Auburn were to get out to a big lead and maybe – you'd get a bit of a discounted price on Carolina. That was one of the great things about the first round. I don't want to look back too much. We mentioned the Virginia game about trailing against Gardner-Webb and North Carolina struggling against Iona. Mm-hmm. Those halftime lines were gifts, and I think that's something that even myself is when I'm looking at these games, I need to do a better job of looking at the end game, looking at the halftime line, and realizing like, okay, this is nothing's ever like free money or a lock, but this is a really good advantage bet right here.
Yeah, I also bet it yesterday. Carolina was even money to win their region. I just thought that was a nice money
that
line.
That is a good – I like that bet.
I looked at it as a money line parlay for even money.
Exactly, and you know, that's exactly what it is.
Giving points,
you're giving points both games, and at the time you didn't know about the health of Washington and the Kentucky-Carolina game. It's basically a – like I said, there'll be a small favorite in that game. So, yeah, you're looking at a better price there.
And Duke and Vatek, you feel like a lot of this is going to be the public dog.
Yeah, I think Vatek's the public dog. I would lay the – I'd lay the 7 with Virginia Tech here, even though it's interesting.
With Duke.
Yes,
Duke,
with Duke. Even though it is interesting that this is the third time now as a number one seed that Duke has entered the Sweet 16 not covering either of their first two games. In the previous 2 years, they wound up losing in the Sweet 16. So I don't know. Does that tell you maybe that Duke was a number one, and if they tended to struggle with these teams eventually – it was going to catch up with them because maybe they didn't necessarily have the numbers to support the rating. I don't know, but I think it's either Virginia Tech money line or lay it and laugh.
Okay,
lay the 7 or just put the Hokies in the money line. I don't think
feels like it's football season.
I don't think this is a 4-point Duke win.
I mentioned I'm a Duke fan. But they're flawed, man. Like, I think about the Conor Anthony Towns Kentucky team that was so, undefeated. Like, there wasn't any holes in that team.
And Wisconsin played an awesome game to beat them.
This one is blatant, and you just saw it right in your face. And then you have it. This is the first game I circled when the bracket came out. It was the first region that was announced. And I said, wow, they got to play a team that beat them already. And I know the Zion factor, but I also look at Zion hasn't been in foul trouble yet, and that's coming. And they got no chance.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah. Do you really want to get into this?
Is it?
Did the ball hit the rim?
Did the ball hit the rim? No, I don't think it did.
Okay, then.
No, I don't think it did, but there definitely wasn't evidence to overrule that.
There was.
There was not.
Yes, there was from up top.
They know,
there was a clear space in between the ball and the rim. It hit the backboard. It hit the foam. Come on.
Yeah, I didn't think the evidence was there to
those are good glasses.
It. Yeah. Hardly. I thought it should have counted.
You saw it? Of course you did. You had probably a UCF money line ticket on your
No. No, I was rooting for Duke. I was rooting for Duke because a buddy of mine had a very large money line parlay with Duke in it that wound up cashing as for a good amount, and I was rooting for him. So I had no – Even though it's funny how the tournament just people like casually like tune in. My sister, who probably hasn't watched a college basketball game in 10 years, like immediately after the game texted, I'm in tears for those kids from UCF. Like, she was watching the game. That's how great the tournament is.
Sister Bear.
Younger Sister Bear.
All we had. Games were trash. Glad we took the red eyes Saturday night.
No kidding.
Oof. Mitch Mush on Sunday. I would take the points there. I said I circled that game before. It keeps like it's going down.
It is.
7 now. 144. I don't know.
Over.
Yeah? Okay. Over. All right. I'm just interested to see what VTech does from an offensive standpoint and a defense. Like, I think you just – I mean, UCF laid a pretty good foundation. The problem is UCF made every shot.
Except,
like, can those except, teams
except
do that?
Except two layups.
Except an alley-oop and a tip-in. So I would lean towards the points there. I like the points there. Then the last game of the night is Friday, Kentucky and Houston. This is fascinating to me because the old adage, it would be, you know, do you start Washington? But if he's healthy, you got to be ready. He's not going to be 100%, is he?
Depends what the injury is.
That just
if it was just a little minor thing, then you would think 2 weeks will be enough to heal. But if it was some type of surgical procedure, then you would think it might be he might not be 100%.
Farnham mentioned the matchups. Defensively on Davis with Higgins, you like Kentucky the way they play defense?
I want to.
You've seen them.
They were that the defensive job that Higgins and Hero did against Wofford was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was what won them the game. They just played fantastic. I want to like Kentucky in this game. I really, really do. The number seems very, very, very low. But I think there's some bets that I think you have to be willing to lose. Mm-hmm. And if you're getting John Calipari as a two seed in the Sweet 16, as a 2.5 or a 3-point favorite, and he's 9-1 against the number, mm-hmm. in this role, he gets his teams to play at a high level on this spot on the big stage. I have to be willing to lose laying the 2.5 or 3 with Kentucky.
Okay. Armani Brooks is the kid for me here with Houston. I think he's their best shooter from 3, and I just see Houston spreading things out and just trying to make this as a speed fest. And if they're making threes, they're going to be in this game. And Kentucky, as good as their talent level is and as good as they've been, and you talked about how good Hagen is, he's been unbelievable. I noticed him, I think it was his first game against Carolina this year when he was just locking yep. guys down. Mm-hmm. If Houston can make the outside shot, that's what I think. And Sean talked about taking away Davis and they really struggle. Brooks is the guy because I could see a million driving kicks for Houston to him. If they could stay up on him and keep him out of the game and not let him make threes, Kentucky's got to like their chances because they have an enormous advantage inside.
So do you go under 17.5 with Corey Davis and over 12.5 with Armani Brooks?
Yes. Yeah. And I like this over 134.5 because I think Hagen's is going to get into a little – what you can do, I can do better.
Okay.
And he's got a lot of nice toys to play with okay. on his team.
Yeah. They have some players in
Heroes
blue
right
and white.
There, too, with Stock climbing, man. That kid's been phenomenal. So versatile. And Wofford, why didn't they just put 5 guys on him at the end of the fall? That was a fun one to watch in the book.
That
man.
Was unbelievable. That
man.
Was great.
That's, saw it coming a mile away. All those favorite bettors are quiet, yep, and then they yep. could sense and it coming.
Foul.
Oh, my Lord.
It was
unbelievable.
I love the sports book.
Yeah. It's
a beautiful place.
It's a good setup, man. It's a good setup. I mentioned Carolina to win it. They're 5-1 right now to win the title. I would jump on that.
That's a hell of a price.
I mean that's my site I have right now. Interested, I saw, was it Purdue? The winner, Purdue and Tennessee are playing each other. Oh, mm-hmm. They dropped. Okay. I thought I saw Tennessee still at 20-1 on. That's my fault then. Not good. Not good there. Michigan State LSU to kick us off. I think Friday's slate is way more interesting to me, but I just have that one game I'm really into with Michigan T-Tech Thursday.
Yeah, Friday. Friday is the night.
Yeah.
Well, I agree. Or, well, I shouldn't say that. I think the Florida State Gonzaga has the potential to be fun.
Social media is going to hate Virginia Oregon because it's going to be methodical.
But you know what? If it's methodical and if it's tight, it's great.
Okay. That's what I said. It might get weird. That's a late slate Thursday night.
I got an early flight on Friday morning, too.
Where are you going?
I got to go to Pennsylvania for a family thing with my wife.
Oh. You're flying to Pennsylvania?
Erie. Oh. So we're actually flying to Cleveland and driving.
Oh. All right. So you're not missing any games.
Well, we'll see. Weekend plans.
Okay. Come on now. Come on, family.
We'll find a way.
Think of the bear. Anything else on the way out? You getting fired up for NBA playoffs? Right around the corner.
Yeah, I heard that. I saw this morning that the Clippers clinched a playoff spot.
It did. You know what the BPI had them at?
I saw when I was on the elliptical this morning, I saw the whole locker room, Doc Rivers, everyone said we're going to win 33 games.
Yeah.
And we're in the playoffs.
That's your crew. That's bad on your people. Isn't that you that's predicting all those wins?
It's not me. that's not
you guys
me.
Crunching those numbers.
I just want to see Giannis win the MVP. That's all.
He deserves it.
He does deserve it.
Come on.
It's more than a guy taking 30 shots a game and averaging 30-something points.
What are we looking at, people? Come on. It's not that hard.
I'm looking forward to the Florida Derby this week.
Well, what do we got?
Haven't seen the – I know the field. I haven't seen I know the post positions. I haven't seen the past performances yet. I can tell you I'm going to be against Bourbon War. He's kind of like the trendy upsetter because he closed so well.
That's a Gulfstream,
yeah,
right?
He closed so well.
Oh, this is the big one.
Yeah, this is the big one. This is the last Gulfstream prep before the
million.
So I think it's
it might
be a $1 million race.
I have to
figure it out. I have to see. But I'm going to be against Bourbon War. He's going to be the trendy because he closed so well into that fast pace.
Okay.
In the Fountain of Youth. So Hidden Scroll, Drew the Rail, I know that. I'll look and I'll see if I can Code of Honor win again, maybe. I don't know. But Bourbon War is going to be a stand against on top for me.
All right, I have a true or false then. True or false, you have a parlay with a team to win the national title in college basketball with a horse to win the Kentucky Derby.
True.
How many? Sick in the head.
Six. Six, actually.
You have six parlays?
Yes, because I played.
How many different teams to win the national? All right, just rattle them off. Go ahead.
I played.
There you go. Get in and people. Get your pen and paper right now. Exotic parlay.
You need to be able to find the location to be able to do this is the key. You can't just walk into.
You guys can find it. You're good at that.
So you're smart.
Here we go.
So here's what I did. I played Gonzaga, Duke, and North Carolina, the three teams to win the title, with game winner and improbable in the Derby. So basically, I played it's six different parlays.
Six different parlays.
Yep. And they all have attractive odds. So if I figure if one of them wins, I'm going to probably.
Are there Derby odds out right now?
All these sites have Derby future book odds.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are your two horses?
Well, they're the top two choices. I think one of Baffert's two horses will win.
Okay.
And then game winner won. They both had terrible trips in the Arkansas preps. And I think people are a little bit down on them right now because neither of them won. But you figure what's been going on at Santa Anita with the track being closed. They were pointed towards a race that weekend. So they had extra time off, training disrupted, and they ran that well. They're due to step up and run well. So that's why we like these things. And then if you really want to get fun, if you really want to get freaky, you could throw a third team in there and play Alabama or Clemson to win the college football national championship. Jesus.
All right. There's too much time. I got stuff to worry about that.
But that's fun. Wouldn't you love to be able to –
It is drive, like paying a season win total.
Wouldn't you love to be able to drive to Mohegan Sun from where we live?
Yeah.
And walk there and say, give me a $100 parlay, Gonzaga to win the national championship in basketball, game winner to win the Kentucky Derby, and Clemson to win the national championship in college football.
When can I do that?
That's what I want to know.
Come on.
Not soon enough.
MGM, Springfield, open up.
Exactly.
Come on. It's for the people. For the kids involved.
Tell Jay Root to make that happen, please.
Man, he was busy. He was running around that sports book like a maniac. Good stuff out of him, though. All right. Favorite non-1 seed to go to the Final Four?
Florida State.
Wow. All right.
Even though I want to say LSU.
You do.
But I'd like LSU to get to the Final Four because that can put me in a nice position.
Okay. I don't know. I think it's the winner of Michigan, Texas Tech.
Okay, you can see that.
All right.
There's no wrong answer.
Yeah.
There's no wrong answer at all.
Just wish there was a right one that we knew
exactly.
Tomorrow's newspaper. I'll wish for it again tonight when I go to bed. take us on out of here.
The less you bet, the more you lose when you win.